It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a fantasy. You don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
You know, for as often as I'm, you know, the attempt is made to embarrass me for that, I probably have not had a junior mint since going to the movies in my teens. Maybe 20s.
Why not?
Because I don't eat any candy ever. Mm-hmm. Like, we had the candy draft 10 years ago. I just was told it was exactly 10 years ago, Halloween. And I didn't know what half the candies were.
Wow.
Just, it's just not part of my...
You gotta get out more.
It's not part of my Awaken program.
Well, we were gifted some candies on Friday at our appearance.
I took them home.
Okay.
And put them on the counter, and they're still there.
Ah, I see. Okay.
And I asked my daughter, because you were like, we talked about how long the Halloween candy lasts in my house. Mm-hmm. And I asked her yesterday, how many pieces of Halloween candy do you think you've eaten? And she said, maybe 20.
That's pretty good.
It's a fair pace, you know, like
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Definitely not just ignoring it, but it's also not.
That's like four a day since Halloween.
Gorging.
Like that's good. I mean, I eat four of those fun size suckers in 20 seconds.
Oh, Joe Goodberry. Joe, can you relate to any of this? Halloween? Oh, yeah. Happy Halloween?
Yeah, I've got three kids, and I'm sneaking their candy whenever I can. And no York peppermint patties or any of that. No mint anything this year. So I think that the candy selection is really slacking because I love those.
Oh, I love hearing. I thought you were going the other way there, but I like it. No,
terrible.
Peppermint patties are great.
Terrible. They're worse than junior mints.
No, how could they be worse? How could they be worse than junior mints?
They're thicker. There's more
of it.
Gross, minty.
That makes it worse. It's bigger. That makes it worse.
Yes, really, I have a mint problem is what it is. I'm just
you
not a mint. I'm not a fan of mint. Mint chocolate chip ice cream. Forget it. I'm not even having it. I can't stand it.
Joe.
My wife loves this peppermint stick.
Anytime.
Oh, I can't do it.
Thanks for not hanging up already, Joe.
Well, forget him. I'm leaving. No, I can't do that.
Joe, it's great to have you back. I don't know if you heard the call. Your name was mentioned last week. Like, we had to talk to. I wonder what's going on with the Bengals. We should talk to Joe. And so you're nice enough to make some time for us here today. What is going on with the Bengals, who have a huge game tomorrow night? I still am a little bit afraid. I think, you know, I think there's some real upside with Cincinnati, and the conference isn't so deep, and it's also not too late. We had a guest on, however, from Kansas City yesterday, and he's like, I think they're done. So I don't know. Do you think they're done? Do you think they're dangerous or in between?
I did hear the call out, by the way. Someone at work told
Good.
Me. So we got people listening out there and letting me know, but and I appreciate that. I just looked up their odds, and I just saw that there were six four favorites to win the AFC, and I said, wow, you know, I guess people just assume they're going to continue to get better because they do every year, even in their Super Bowl season and the AFC Championship 2022 the year after. They were 5-4 at this point, and they're 4-5 right now with basically one play losses to the Chiefs and the Ravens. They could have won either one of those games if things would have fallen differently, and I guess, you know, bad teams lose those games, but they were shootouts, they were close type games, so I could see why the bettors and Vegas would say, you know, there's still a chance here. The schedule is not crazy. They came into the year with a top five easiest schedule. I think most of that still remains, and they have the Steelers twice ahead of them. They have the Broncos. They have the Chargers who are sitting in front of them for wild card spots. Yeah, this Ravens game is going to be tough tomorrow night. Any division Thursday night game is tough for the road team, but at the same time, if they don't win this game, I think there's enough evidence of the last few weeks that they might be figuring it out a little bit, and I think that makes, you know, some people confident, and I think others. I'm surprised to hear the Chiefs guy say that he thinks they're done. I don't think they are at all. I think they've got a lot of young players. They're one of the younger teams in the league, too, heading into this year. A lot of these young guys are just now starting to flash more consistently, over the last 2 and 3 weeks, and I think that's good signs for the future.
What is, in your view, what are, because I'm sure it's not just one thing, Joe, like what has led to 4-5? Is it, I mean, T. Higgins has missed some time. We know the offense has looked mostly really productive, but the defense dipped. What maybe caused, start there, what has caused the defense to not be as strong overall this year as it has been in years past?
Man, that's like chronicling the last 3 to 4 years of mistakes, right? Whenever the team or the organization doesn't sign a guy or doesn't extend Jesse Bates and lets DJ Reader walk, and they really can't figure out what they're doing wrong. Like, oh, we'll spend a draft pick here. We'll get this guy in the first round. And then when those guys don't work out, it's hard to replace good veterans, especially a guy like Jesse Bates, who's 25, maybe a top 2 or 3 safety in the league, probably is. And you just say, oh, this first round pick will replace him. And then what if he doesn't? And then they don't, never seem to have that backup plan there. And instead, they've allowed the talent to deteriorate in key areas, whether that's the defensive line, especially at defensive tackle, whether it's in the secondary at corner and at safety. And then now they look at it and say, oh, well, these young guys we've drafted, we've thrown draft picks on the defensive side just every year, and it's not working out. So at that point, when you are a heavy reliance on Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins to carry your offense, and yeah, they've made improvements on the offensive line. I do think they've made improvements at tight end, and they're more explosive at running back with Chase Brown leading the way. But when T. Higgins is missing 65% of the snaps or you know, heading into week 10, it's like, yeah, that's your offense. You're paying him $22 million. You could probably spend that $22 million from a roster construction in different ways to help this roster out, and he's not out there. And then you figure, well, we'll spend a third-round pick on Jermaine Burton, the wide receiver at Alabama. And, yeah, we know he's got some issues, but the talent is undeniable, and we've all seen it in practices. And he's caught a couple balls this year, each for 40 yards. So, like, the talent's there, but he can't get right, and he can't show up to meetings when he's supposed to. So when T goes down, you have to punish him and deactivate him because, you can't set that precedent as a team that's trying to make the playoff run here. I think it's just too many hits to absorb. And they're notorious slow starters. We always blamed it on Joe Burrow being injured. But at the same time, you look back and you say, yeah, they don't tackle in camp. They don't really go hard in camp. They don't play their starters in preseason. And they're digging themselves out of holes as they start slow every year. And this time, you're probably doing it with a little bit less talent.
And you had a Chase holdout or hold in this year, too, on top of all that.
And Boyd left, too. I mean, not that he's great, but there's familiarity there, a certain dependability in a role. On Burton, what's the definitive story there? Like, I feel like I got broad strokes of it over the weekend. Like, he was told you're going to be integral this week. Like, let's go get it. And then he just didn't show up on Saturday. And I don't know, these pictures of him in a casino by himself, real. Like, what are we dealing with here?
Yeah, so I'm not a reporter, but I do know the whole story here. He was going to be heavily involved. You're correct. They said, listen, T's not going to play again. That quad is going to be out a couple weeks. That he played a bunch the week before. And on tape, man, he against the Eagles, he looked really good. Like, his routes look strong. He's getting open. He's undressing. Like, Darius Slay is a good corner. And it's like, okay, this guy needs to play more. And then the Bengals agree. They saw it. They're like, yeah, all right, we're going to get this guy in the field. We're going to throw him the ball. He may be iffy here or there with details, but we'll figure out. You know, we'll get him on the field. We'll let his talent just do his thing. So they're heavily putting him in the game plan, and he's aware of this, and the whole offense is aware of this, and they're excited about it. And Wednesday, he's at practice, and they're running it with him. Thursday, they're at practice running it with him. Thursday's Halloween. Friday, and here's the thing that people get confused about. You just don't show up for practice and then go home, right? Players are there early for meetings, for check-ins, for watching tape, going over things. 2 hours and 50-something minutes, he shows up late Friday morning. And they're like, okay, we've got to fine you for this. It's a $30,000 fine. Come on, dude, we need you. Get it together. This isn't the first time he's had an issue like this, either falling asleep or being late. They're like, come on, we need you. Let's go through practice Friday, and then Saturday we got our walkthrough. He does not show up on Saturday for the walkthrough at all. So, like, back-to-back days, they're just like, we cannot. Like, they were going to overlook the Friday thing. The players were like, all right, man, we're trying to all lock in here and do this. And he does that again 2 days in a row. They had to deactivate him. They had to make him a healthy scratch. And you could see even Burrow on the sideline. A lot of people, I don't know if you saw any of the clips, he throws 5 touchdowns last week, and he just looks mad on the sideline. And there's even a couple clips of him next to Burton, and he's just instantly walks away from the guy. Doesn't even want to look at him, doesn't even want, and then maybe we're reading too much into it, but I don't think the team is very happy when a high-profile draft pick that's supposed to help you does these things, and they just are like, come on. We're in the thick of this thing. We can get back into it, and we can't depend on this guy.
That is really unusual for a rookie, especially. I mean, this what a great opportunity he has,
right.
But he can't even show up. That's bad. Listen, Joe, I mean, I guess I'm guilty of sort of drawing conclusions sometimes when it's the Bengals in this sort of way, but Higgins being hurt, that was a practice injury a couple of weeks ago. The Bengals play Baltimore tomorrow night, critical game, doubtful, which I think would be three in a row that he would miss. Do you believe him? I mean, I wonder just if this season could get to a point where with Higgins sort of grumbling about not having the long-term deal, and Chase has got some, probably has some sort of frustration as well. If there isn't movement on that, and there won't be with Higgins, I wonder if the Bengals can't stay in it, if we see these guys both sit out. I guess it's different questions, but I just wonder what kind of benefit of the doubt you think Higgins deserves.
Yeah, so first, you know, I do get some information once in a while, and it was the first week, if you remember, week one against the Patriots, it was a Friday practice as well. He hurt his hamstring. It's like his seventh hurt hamstring since his Clemson days and into Cincinnati. So that has been a reoccurring thing, and I was told at the time it's going to be a couple weeks, and they were right. So I didn't think that was him. You know, if you can give me like, yeah, this is going to be a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and we'll see from there. And he actually is out for that long, I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt for that. And when this quad happened, I was also told could be 4 weeks potentially on this. And so I don't think they're e-stringing them along and holding themselves out. So I'm kind of giving them the benefit out there that the guy's hurt. And, you know, when it's a four-week injury, I expect him to be back at 4 weeks. Anything longer than that, then I would question. If they lose the next two games or something, I would wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
But you're right to bring up these other holdouts, too. Trey Hendrickson also held out this year. He's having a monster year. And he requested a trade right before the draft. I think it was the day before the draft. So they've had a lot of issues and turmoil. And I made this point when they started the season as bad as they did, that the organization has failed the players to let them feel secure and put their bodies on the line and do the things they're supposed to do. And I know a lot, these guys are making a lot of money. But you also want the long-term security. The Bengals don't give out guaranteed money past the first year of any deal. That was the issue with Trey Hendrickson. He signed an extension for 2 years. But after 1 year goes by, it looks at his deal like, I'm going out there and anything could happen. I have no guaranteed money in this deal, and I'm leading the league in sacks, right? Not that he knew this would happen, but he's one of the top five pass rushers in the league. He probably felt pretty confident in himself. I just think that they've created a bad atmosphere that could have been or on the verge of losing the locker room or maybe even potentially turning on Zach Taylor if they weren't able to turn this thing around. And they're only 4-5, so let's see if they do turn it around, and let's see what happens there. Not that I want this, because I am a Bengals fan, but as an analyst and someone who likes the story, I want to see how they dig out of this. I want to see what happens in these scenarios, whether it goes good or bad.
You know, Joe, it strikes me, I feel like this almost definitely came up. We've been talking to you long enough now. Like, when the Bengals first started getting good, I feel like I expressed to you some concern because of the reputation of the franchise, because of ownership. Like, will they be able to keep it all together in this era, paying receivers $30 million and paying a quarterback $50 million and whatever? And it sounds like that's not going great. I mean, they got Burrow done, but every other key guy whose name we've mentioned here has had at some point here, and maybe even currently, reason to be frustrated with how they're being handled by the organization.
Bulldog, your memory's great. You did bring that up. I remember exactly. I remember which room I was in when I took the call that day. But you're right, and you know something I did? People have been asking, and I did research in the offseason, and if you remember the Andy Dalton era, Marvin Lewis, 2011 to 2015, they make the playoffs five straight years, but they extended Andy Dalton. So the 2011 draft class was A.J. Green, Andy Dalton, Clint Bowling. There were three good players from that class. They extended all three before the 2015 season, or I think Dalton was the last one right before 2015. And they never make the playoffs again after 2015. The same thing happened with Carson Palmer, Chad Ochocinco, T.J. Hushmanzada, Rudy Johnson. When they extended them all, they never made the playoffs again with those guys. They have struggled to figure out how to draft when you're in the 20s, when you don't have as much money to spend in free agency, when you're, you know, top-heavy at quarterback. It's a different way to build the roster. You can't pack it the way you did. You've got to convert some of these high base salaries and into signing bonuses and get extra cap space and kick it down the road a little bit, as these teams do. Sure, there's risk involved in there. Sure, that may bite you eventually. We're going to have to tank for a year or whatever is going to happen because, you know, the Browns are going to have to field a CFL team next year. But, it, you know, it's worth the risk, in my opinion, especially if you're a franchise that has never won a Super Bowl ever. It's just you build the team differently, and I don't think they know how to do that. And they're struggling right now to figure it out. And for them to even make a trade at the trade deadline is crazy. That's the first time they've ever acquired a player for a pick straight up in the Bengals' history at the trade deadline. So maybe there are signs of them moving forward and figuring it out. But, man, it's such low-hanging. No, how low is the bar if that's what we're getting excited about?
Yeah. Let me circle back just quickly to Burton. What happens this week? Like, is he back? Is he practicing? Is he going to get the opportunity that he just blew up last week of his own volition? Like, what's the way forward with him?
Yeah, so it was a short week, so that's good. You know, he's not too many days to mess it up, I guess. I assume he's going to be involved, and I assume they're going to go to him because if you watch the tape, and I've highlighted it a few times on Twitter, teams are playing Ja'Marr Chase like Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson. They are not, especially when T. Higgins is out. They are not giving any respect to these other players that are out there for the Bengals. The Bengals have liked the other receivers they drafted, Andre Yosivash, and Jermaine Burton, and they like Trent and Irwin, but these are just guys. I don't think there's any difference maker out there. So teams are heavily shading their coverage, doing everything they can to take Ja'Marr Chase out of the game, and they need Burton. I don't think they have a choice. I think they have to use him, and they have to let him win one-on-one, and they're going to throw him the ball. But, you know, I think to their credit, they said, we're going to give you a clean slate and start over and make this a week-to-week thing, and they hope he responds the right way, and hopefully the negativity got to him. But I do think that picture of him at the casino, and hey, you want to go to the casino? I really don't care. But you better not either have other issues off the field or affecting your play on the field.
Right. With Joe Goodberry, BengalsOnTheBrain.com, just a couple more minutes. So it's Baltimore tomorrow night. These teams have had some memorable and big games. And this year's was at least memorable. Overtime game, the Bengals had a field goal to win it. There was a bad snap or hold, and eventually Baltimore wins. What about the matchup? Like, do you feel good about the Bengals' chances of going in there and winning? The Ravens' offense looks just so good. I don't know if anybody would feel that good about it, but again, I'm coming from a place where I think the Bengals are definitely to be respected this season still, tomorrow night. But I just don't know, like, sort of what you think. What do you think their chances are?
Of course you get a chance in a division game, right? But Lamar is playing so good again. The Ravens' offense looks so good again. What a decision by Derrick Henry and the Ravens, I mean, together. But Derrick Henry also gets, you know, amplified when he's got a quarterback that can move the way he can, because they're just not able to put as many guys in the box when you have to actually account for Lamar Jackson potentially running the ball, and now he's having a career year. They may be wearing him down a little bit, so that's something to look for in the future. But looking at data today, and the story used to be, the word was, you blitz Lamar because he can't make decisions quick enough and isn't accurate enough with the ball, doesn't see it well enough. Now he is the best quarterback in the league per PFF against the blitz this year. So what do you do now? Because his numbers are even better if you don't blitz him. Looking at pressure rates, the top two quarterbacks in the league, when they get pressured based on quarterback rating and PFF grades, are Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. And that game looked like it in week five. You watch that game, that was an awesome display by both quarterbacks. They both made some crazy plays in that game. The Bengals couldn't get Lamar down. 15 missed tackles on defense that day between Derrick Henry and Lamar and some other players. Of course, Zay Flowers is a handful who actually looks really good. I give the Bengals a chance, of course, but I think this is a tough one. If Burrow can play at the level he's been nearing and getting close to, I think if they had a winning record, if they had beaten the Ravens the first time and the Chiefs, I think we'd be talking about Burrow as the MVP of the league right now. That's how well he's playing. And if he usually hits his stride midseason, if that's what it is, and he goes out there and plays the Ravens at the top of his game, they're going to have a chance. And here's the underrated thing, too. The crew for this game is the most flag-happy crew in the league. The Bengals are the number one team for least amount of flags, penalties per game. The Ravens right now are 32nd in net penalty yards in the league this year. That could end up being maybe steal a play here or there, or a whole drive, a possession, could be the difference in a one-score game again.
Just don't make it too many because Al Michaels will be upset. He doesn't like you, you. It's sort of like the classic confrontation. Whoever this ref is, the most flag heavy crew versus Al Michaels. That is a classic yes, battle.
And it's a classic matchup. Yeah.
Who is the who is the referee?
I didn't even see who it was. I didn't even care.
Sorry.
I just read the article and thought, yeah, that's interesting. But they must do that on purpose just to see how far they can push Al Michaels.
Yeah. A couple of early penalties, like, right. Is it going to be one of these games? You know, just sort of let's be a little bit. Let's let him play a little bit here so we don't make Al
Joe, before we split here, what do you make of the Steelers? Like, a part of me feeling like the Bengals are still alive is that the Steelers are up there at the top of the division, and I feel like they can probably be tracked down if the Bengals can get it together. Are you buying the Steelers as a contender?
Not for like the AFC, you know, champion, but for the division, sure. They play tough. They keep everything close. I don't know if their offense is good enough. Even with Fields, they had a really strong run game, and he contributed a bunch in that. He could scramble and run. Russ Wilson really can't. So I think that limits their splash plays a little bit, but Russ will throw it downfield and Pickens will make a play. Maybe Mike Williams will make a play.
Mm-hmm.
They're a high variance offense. I don't think they're good enough there. Their O-line has issues. I don't know. If they run into a team like the Bengals and Ravens, they haven't played a division game yet. I think their first division game is week 11. So like I don't know yet. Are they going to fall in those AFC North games where the teams just look better or have better quarterbacks? Despite having such a great defense in Pittsburgh again, somehow I guess it's just Mike Tomlin or the Steelers or whatever the magic's going on there. But it's going to be probably tough for anyone that doesn't have a great offensive quarterback. But in their division, there's two teams that have that.
Yeah, we did Pittsburgh. I want to find it real quick. Pittsburgh's schedule yesterday, they have all six division games left, plus this week at Washington. They also have at Philadelphia in December and the Chiefs. So
yeah, that's a tough road.
That's not great. Like that could be 3-6, where you're 9-8, and that's right on the line. Thank you, Joe. Great to talk to you again. Good luck tomorrow, I want to say.
Thank you. It's good talking to you guys too.
Thank you. Joe Goodberry, BengalsOnTheBrain.com, the I believe foremost, I want to say, Bengals analyst on X.
Sure.
Online.
Mm-hmm.
On Twitter. On Earth.
Threads. Blue Sky. I don't know.
You know them all, apparently. It's not like you know everything about this.
I did I don't know. When it seemed like it was burning 2 or 3 years ago, one of them was only in a test phase. They didn't even have their official app yet. And I went in there, connected with I saw some familiar handles. And like, oh, hi, I'm here too. And I never went back. Like old habits. I don't know. Maybe at some point. But I don't feel an urgency right now.
Who knows? There might be another round of urgency.
Right.
Soon enough. Sal Capaccio at 5. Let's hear from you next. 803-0550 on the Bills. Is there something about them, a change you might like to see them make? Something either how they play, who they play, you might want to see be different. Again, Sal coming up too. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. 803-0550. This is WGR.
Short-term, long-term. It's not like you're in a position necessarily to get on a run with Flacco. And then long-term, I mean, he turns 40 in January, and what are you doing? Are you going to about to have one of the more awkward off-seasons in Colts history of, yeah, Anthony Richardson, we just benched him for fun. Like, trust us, year 3, this is going to be the year, 10 starts, et cetera, et cetera. 2025, you know, that's where he's going to really take off. It's just a very awkward time for the Colts, their fan base, and their franchise.
That is Kevin Bowen, 107.5 in Indianapolis on WGR earlier today. Yeah, try to see that one through. Flacco is, you know, he's a temp. But if they were to win, say, the Super Bowl, maybe he stays, you know, if he wants to play again. I think that's one where something, I mean, he might not even play it anyway. Next year, he's so old, but that's one where it would have to be something like that. I was on Matthew Collar's podcast today, Purple Insider, and now there is an interesting one, Minnesota.
Right, because Darnold, they're having a very good year. Darnold is not Flacco's age. He's the same age. Well, he's even younger, I think, than Josh Allen.
He's younger than Burrow.
Right. Even though that draft, yeah, he's just one of those guys. And they're playing great. So yeah, that could get a little dicey there with McCarthy.
What would happen if they won, say, one round? Let's say two rounds. What if they go to the NFC Championship? McCarthy's first round pick off a knee injury. Darnold is also on a 1-year deal. Like, he's not somebody who's already there for next year. He's starting somewhere.
Right. No.
In the NFL next season.
That means, like, yeah, you don't have, you got no net below you there. Because if that could happen, they could win a couple playoff games, I think. I don't think that's far-fetched. Their defense is high quality. They've got playmakers, and Darnold has been better than fine, I think, even. Boy, that's tricky, because, you know, if you at least had him on like a modest 2-year deal or something, then you could feel all right about, you know, continuing. But having to commit to him off of that year, that's unlikely. I think J.J. McCarthy is their quarterback opening day next year. Almost no matter what. They're not going to pay Darnold all that money with McCarthy sitting there. And Darnold would warrant all that money, I think, on a new contract. Maybe not like $50 million, but still close, like more than Geno.
How tough is that, though?
That's really tough. Like, that is really tough.
Minnesota is another one of these franchises that just has, they've been good plenty of times, but no Super Bowl. And if with Sam Darnold, they go far, what, they're going to say no thank you next year? I don't care who the rookie is. I mean, that's tough.
That is, it's definitely tough, but that is a huge commitment on top of a huge commitment. You know, I mean, the draft pick is a big commitment. So, man, I predict they will not give him a new contract.
Okay.
I can't, even if they were to.
I will also predict
win
that.
Playoff games.
I will also predict that, but my assumption is that they do not win playoff games.
Okay. All right. That'll make it a little easier.
Like Matthew was saying, we talked for quite a while. The Vikings just played the Colts, and the Bills play the Colts on Sunday. And he pointed out how like they were a terror on defense against Flacco in that game. And he's like, whenever they play a quarterback who isn't that good, they wreck him. But when they play somebody good, they lose. Like, they have had tough times. Mm-hmm. They're not above being exposed by a guy who can, you know, really play.
Well, which category does Purdy go into there? Yeah. Because they did a pretty good job on him.
And Stroud.
He's the one that said, like, you know, ghosts or whatever. Like, he just was really confused by their defense.
And Stroud.
Yeah.
That game wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Stafford got him. I don't know. I do know that Sam Darnold is 33-1 to win the MVP. Along with Brock Purdy, Kyler Murray, C.J. Stroud, Kirk Cousins, and Derrick Henry. Can we rule out any of these players winning the MVP this year?
I think I want to rule every name you set out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Purdy, Murray, Cousins, Stroud, Darnold, Derrick Henry.
None of them are going to get there.
Okay. So that leaves 7 guys who have shorter odds than any of those players. Working from 7-1, Jalen Hurts, 18-1. You think there's any way he could win the MVP?
They have shown life recently. Like, if they, what are they now?
6-2.
All right. I mean, they get to 13-4, which should be in contention for the one. I don't know. The Lions are up there with only the one loss, so that might make it tough. I think if they track down Washington, which they're only a half game back, I think Hurts is a real. I think he'd be the reason that they get hot. I think he's the reason they've gotten hot here already. And if that continues, I could see his status elevating.
At Dallas Sunday, good timing. Then they host Washington next Thursday night. That's good.
All right, that is tasty, yes.
All right, so you say Hurts is live.
I say Hurts is live.
Burrow is next up from Hurts. At 12-1, I think Joe Goodberry's right. And this is kind of how it always is, where a couple of different plays, the game they lost to Kansas City, their loss to Kansas City was no less cruel than the Ravens, who lost there when likely came down just out of bounds at the end of the game. Cincinnati had it too, but there was a flag. And then Kansas City kicked a field goal to beat them, just kind of stole that game.
Yeah.
And then the Ravens game that they lost back in Cincinnati in overtime. Yeah, I mean, that's 6-3. If they would have won both of those games, we wouldn't be talking about the Bengals this way at all if they had that record.
Yeah.
And so 12-1.
I like Hurts more than Burrow just because the record is so tough. You know, I think they would have to really go, 7-1 here to the wire.
Bengals?
Yeah, excuse me. I think to even finish 11-6, that's where they're at, right? Did I miss? Yeah, right. So, to me, that's conceivable. But even that, is that, you know, I'm thinking of you with the top seed type thing here. Like, yep. How good is the team? I think I still like them to get to the playoffs and maybe, like, catch and pass Pittsburgh. Because I think Baltimore is who I would bet on to still win that division. But I think you're not going to win your division. I think you're in tough. So I like Hurts more than Burrow.
Okay. Then we get to Jaden Daniels. At 9-1, the fifth favorite at Bet Online right now, MVP.
I'm inclined to throw him out because he's a rookie and he will almost certainly win something else. Offensive Rookie of the Year. And here's your hardware, kid. Thanks for coming. Pat on the head.
Is it the same voters?
That's a good question.
I don't think it is.
I don't know.
I don't think it is. Why wouldn't it be? I don't know either. If it were... That's an interesting point.
Well, even if it's not, though, like don't you think the MVP voters are going to be looking at the pool of players, pool of candidates, and go, he's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like, they're not voting, but obviously he's going to win it. That's enough for him. Unless he has a year, where, you know, and he's been excellent, but is he, like, tracking towards... you know, statistically just blowing everyone out of the water? Because I think as a rookie, I feel like that's what he would have to do.
He's on a pace for about 3,700 yards, nothing insane. Through 9 games, 9 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions, so almost double those numbers. And he's run for 459, which is 2 yards off the team lead and 4 touchdowns.
That's not getting it done.
You don't think so?
I like Burrow more than him.
Lamar will beat those numbers.
Yeah.
Also, but that's still like
it's really
4,600 total yards,
yeah.
35 total touchdowns. Like, Allen's not going to get there, I think. Is he? So Allen has, obviously, he has a lot going for him. The Bills record, his reputation, you know, he's been close to this award numerous times. And he'll have... good stats, but not his like personal best it changes.
He's got 20 total touchdowns right now, only 3 on the ground. So like the 15 from last year, although last year it really got hot down the stretch. I think he had than 3 at this point last year, but still he went crazy at the end of the year.
Rushing.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's probably not going to get, you know, near that total. But he's at 20 total touchdowns right now.
Yeah.
Already.
He'll have more touchdowns, but fewer yards.
Yeah.
Passing yards, he might come in above Daniels. Like, his pace right now is 3850 or something like that. 2,001 yards after 9 games.
Yeah.
And then only 211 rushing, but 3 touchdowns, like you said, 2 in the opener. So we jumped around there. My fault. Daniels at plus 900. Goff at plus 850. There's your one seed.
Yep. I think Goff is very alive.
Yeah.
What was the stat about, like, more touchdown passes than incompletions?
Yeah.
Good Lord. What are we even doing here? And not just through, like, one game. Like, I don't know if that still holds now, but it was, I think, leading into week 9.
I think it's over the last 4 games.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
I saw that on Sunday, that they have... more touchdown passes than incomplete passes, maybe? Is that what it was?
But maybe not for the year. Maybe it's for a pocket of the season.
Still,
it's incredible.
For any one game.
Yeah, I think he's live. They could lose. Their max loss total might be 3, right? So they're 14-3, and they're cruising to the one seed. He's very live to me.
30 touchdown passes, 8-9 interceptions. He leads the league in completion percentage, Goff. Again, numbers, though, we checked it with Daniels and also with Goff. They're not going to say the least, they're not going to blow Allen away.
Right.
So Goff is right now the fourth choice. The top three, Lamar Jackson at plus 290, Allen at plus 300, Mahomes at plus 400. If they win other games, the Chiefs.
Good luck. That's been the reason for him being up there. I mean, for a while we were, you know, talking about it a lot with Sam and Joe, our BetQL guys. The placeholder, like, what are we doing here? Like, it's not a prediction. I mean, it kind of is. Like, the betting outlets are trying to guard against him winning it, so they're worried he's going to win it, and they don't want to put too big a number on it because people will hop all over it, and then they'll take a bath when they go 17-0. Because I think if he has the year he's been having, even with the interceptions, but they go undefeated, I think he'll win it. But I don't think his stats will be anywhere near as good as Jackson's or even Allen's. But I think he'd get it just for having a 17-0 season.
And there's that legacy stuff that we talk about a lot with MVP, where Jackson's already 1-2 and it feels heavy.
Right.
And Mahomes is 1-2 and maybe it feels light. Well,
I like Mahomes and Allen. Of the people we just talked about, Mahomes, Allen, Goff. Who was the other?
Hurts.
Hurts. Those are the four that I feel most strongly that have the best chance to win it.
Jackson so far is challenging the theory, though.
Yes, he is. Right.
He would never win a third.
Right.
He is third in the league in passing yards.
Yeah.
Sal Capaccio coming up at five.
He could do it. I didn't think there was a year out there that he could have that could happen. But he might be having that year.
So far, it's happening.
Yeah.
Back after this, Sal at 5, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Latest on Keon Coleman, Tyler Bass, and the rest of the Bills who are off to Indianapolis this weekend, week 10, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Sunday morning, we have the Giants and Panthers. Sounds like rookie running back Jonathan Brooks may be in line to make his NFL debut, which might make him the first player ever to do so in Germany. You know, it's not like they play these games in Europe in week one, but he's back. And so Munich for Giants-Panthers. You know, a lot of people knee-jerk to how or why they think these games in Europe are just lame. You know, and sometimes it's bad teams.
Yeah, sure. I also think it's terribly unfair for the teams that have to do it each year, because everyone doesn't have to do it every year, and it just kind of sucks.
And I think there's probably largely an attitude in football fans that, like, well, why do they deserve a game? You know, why
yeah.
why bother to do any of this?
Why are you taking one of my games away? That kind of thing. Yeah.
Brazil this year, of course, London again, Mexico City, these places, Guam. Right around the corner, Guam. Mm-hmm. I would just like to say, I haven't mentioned this, I think, but I've had it on my mind since New England played Jacksonville in London. I'm not sure if it was Wembley or Tottenham's stadium. I think it might have been Wembley. But, I mean, that matchup isn't too much better than this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 86 or 88,000 people at that game.
Yeah.
And they're not all just coming from here.
No. There's definitely, I have no doubt that there's interest.
They have built something.
Yeah, sure. They have. And I respect that. I just don't think regular season games that count in the standings should be played at that level of disadvantage to the teams that have to travel over there and do it and then come back and keep going. I think it hurt the Bills last year. I think the playing surfaces are in question. The field in Brazil was a joke. So there's that. Like, I feel like it's everything's not as buttoned up as it should be. Although, I don't know, there are fields that they play on every week in North America that are terrible. At that, so it's not like Brazil has the market cornered on that or anything. I just don't think it's fair. Competitively, I just don't think it's fair. That's my biggest beef with it. I don't, you know, take a game from my team. Like, okay, I'm fine. Maybe on the bright side, that lowers my bill for the year because I only have 7 games instead of 8 or whatever, or 8 instead of 9 if it's a year where I have 9 now because, stupidly, the number of games is an uneven number. But I just think competitively it sucks for the teams that have to go do it.
Giants and Panthers, 9:30. Sunday morning, Munich, Germany. Set your alarms. Sal after sports, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.